And good afternoon, Western. Good afternoon, Western New York and Southern Ontario. Listening to the sounds of Thelonious Monk. I mean, come on, how cool is that? Thelonious. Whose name Thelonious? It's a great name. You know, I was listening to Thelonious there, and he's playing a song, and the song that he's playing, which is pretty cool. I can't believe the year it was actually produced. I mean, I thought it was old, but this thing goes back way, way, way to the early 50s. He's been an icon in the jazz world for just about ever. But we're not here to talk about jazz. We're here to talk about real estate, because real estate is cool as far as I know, which is always our slogan. So having said that, we're going to talk about some interesting things that have to do with this and that. And if you want to be a caller, give us a buzz. You can call us at 563-999-3066. That's 563-999-3066. And as far as I know, you will be a rock star when you call in. So let's talk about some of the things that are going on in the real estate world as it exists in Western New York, or, you know, sometimes we like to say Southern Ontario because that's part of our audience too. But generally speaking, Western New York, it comes down to what we friendly call 716 land. It's Buffalo and the surrounding area. So let's talk about what makes a market. You know, sometimes I heard the other day somebody was talking about how the prices are going. He says, I won't pay that price. Well, you know what? Perhaps you shouldn't. Nobody's compelling you to buy something right now. If you don't want to pay the price, you don't pay the price. But remember this. Don't get mad when someone else comes along and they step in there and they do buy it. See, because that's what makes a market. I try not to get caught in the act of rolling my eyes when I hear this from time to time, and I hear buyers lose out because they refuse to do what they needed to do or pay what they needed to do to secure a property when they had the chance. See, one of the biggest problems in the wonderful world of real estate right now, anywhere, I mean really anywhere, but specifically let's just talk about what's in our own backyard, is that people on both sides of the equation, regardless of whether they are the agents or the actual principals, they fail to take into account the human part of the drama. So let's put something out there that none of us should forget. A real estate transaction is by its very nature an extremely emotional transaction. I used to love to hear people on the Lower East Side say, well, man, like you're hitting me where I live. Yeah, we literally are hitting people where they live or perhaps where they hope to live. So, and then, what aggravates the fact of the whole transaction beyond that is this whole notion of caveat emptor. Now, you may not have been a Latin scholar, but you know what? You may have at least learned that expression, and what it means is let the buyer beware. So the hidden message within the transaction is that basically there's a big possibility that the seller's looking to put you over the jumps and take advantage of you. That may or may not be the case. In most cases, it's not the case at all. He just says something he wants to sell. Do you want to buy it? Step over or don't. Or don't. I mean, really. So having said that, the implicit message caveat after let the buyer beware is that somebody's going to be a rascal. Okay, so move this thing down the field a little bit, as they say in football. After a sale is agreed to, rarely have I ever heard a seller not say, gee, we should have held out for more. We could have got more money. Agents will frequently hear buyers saying a similar thing, but it's on the flip side. They'll say, oh, man, I know we overpaid. We just overpaid. I know that we did. In this particular case, it's the tincture of buyer's remorse, and if the seller sells it and he has that expression, gee, we should have held up more, well, then it's seller's remorse. They may not, you know, actually sit down and queer the deal, but that's what's the mechanism that's at hand. The irony is, even when the seller's making a killing and selling way over the asking price, and we're seeing a lot of that way over the asking price. I mean, you know, all the numbers are relative, but it's not unusual to see something that's priced at $225 go for $300. Not unusual. or have 16 offers or 20 offers. We're still seeing that. Don't let people tell you, well, the market's slowing down. It's really not slowing down in Western New York or the Buffalo market. Anything that any of the agents that I'm talking to are saying, in fact, the level of scarcity on inventory has increased. So, as I said, the irony is even when they feel like they're being skinned alive, you know, there's this thing about, well, and then what about the buyer? He starts to have misgivings too, and it's pretty much as soon as the electronic signature is dry. And sometimes this leads buyers and sellers, as I said, to remorse or that they oversold or they overpaid. But the funny thing about the whole thing and what fuels the emotion is that it's just what it's always been the nature. However, when there's scarcity of inventory, scarcity of resources, emotions run even higher. The emotional nature of the transaction, it really might just be the actual toughest part of the business. And when agents come in and they think that when they're starting up, they think that, you know, it's going to be a really easy business. I think most of them fail to take this into account. And sometimes there's a little bit of a blame factor. Like, I didn't get the house because you didn't tell me to pay more, or I didn't get the house because you told me to charge less, whatever. Somebody always wants to point the finger, and they forget what actually is occurring when a market is made. Sometimes what happens is they actually call the veracity of the agent into question. And the worst of all scenarios is when they ask the agent outright, and it's almost like a whiny tone of voice. So who are you actually working for? For me, as a buyer's agent, or the seller? Flip it around. The seller might say, well, who are you actually working for me or the buyer? You know, it just really frosts agents when they hear that, because there's clearly a failure to understand what is occurring and what is making a market. Here's the worst part of this kind of a dialogue when we hear it. It's invariably unwarranted. It's an unwarranted interrogation. And when negotiations are off by only several thousands of dollars, and a lot of times it is several thousands of dollars, like $5,000 or $10,000, and they're close, and somebody misses out because of $5,000 or $10,000. But somebody says, I think that you're just trying to make more money. Okay, so let's find out just how insulting that really is. So let's plug some really simple numbers into the equation so you can see the ludicrousness of it. Okay, let's say you're off by $5,000 and you think the agent's trying to squeeze you for more money, Mr. Buyer. Okay, and he's just trying to make more money on his commission. So, and just to make the deal, let's use very conservative numbers, and then we're going to double them. And you can see how even with conservative numbers, it's kind of a silly thing to say and super insulting. Okay, $5,000 difference, presuming there are two agents in the transaction, and pretty much 85% of the transactions, you have two agents in the transaction who work for two different brokers. If the agents are on what they call basic 50% splits, and that's about right, okay? Could be a little more, 60%, 70%, but let's just use easy, simple numbers. If they're charging, let me just pick a number. It could be 6, it could be 7, it could be 5, it could be any set commission or whatever, and that's it, whatever agreed upon or negotiated commission with the seller. Because invariably the seller is going to wind up paying the commission. The buyer is going to wind up paying nothing for a commission in almost all cases. And the agent is going to get compensated as a convenience of the transaction. Now the buyer could always say, well, I'm really paying because it's in there. Well, you know what? You're not reaching into your pocket. You're not writing a check. Okay. So having said that, let me go back with this $5,000 swing number. Presuming there's two agents in the transaction who work for two different brokers, and they're on a 50% split, stick with me. That means, let's do the math, 7% of $5,000 is $350. But the agent doesn't make $350 more because it's probably going to be a four-way split. That means if you really think that they're being extra ferocious and all they care about is money, they're going to net about $87.50. So let's round it off, and you know how much I don't like to round numbers off, but just for the sake of this illustration, it's a $90 increase in their check. So here's the question. Do you really think that any agent is willing to sell their credibility, their integrity, and maybe risk losing the rapport that they valiantly aggrieved or strived to establish with you just to make an extra $90. I suspect it's not going to happen with any agent if they only have even half of a brain or a third of a brain or a tenth of a brain. Okay, she said, well, what are the numbers there? Okay, fine. Let's double it. Let's say it's a $10,000 spring. Okay, that means the net to each of those agents is about twice times 90 is $180. For $180, this guy's going to risk his career for one transaction for $190. It just doesn't make sense. It's insulting. So many times when the emotions start to flare and, you know, the buyer's feeling like he's getting squeezed or the seller's feeling squeezed, it's not a big difference. And frankly, if you don't step up and pay the price, guess what? Everyone goes home. Nobody gets paid. Nobody gets to get anything out of it. The buyer's not going to get a house. Seller's not going to sell. So who really creates the market? That's the $64,000 question. And having said that, is a really simple answer. Are you ready? Are you braced for impact? Yeah. Who sets the market? Well, if you are a buyer and by definition, you actually buy, you do. You're willing to pay the price. Oh, if you're not willing to pay the price and somebody else comes along, they set the price. Real Estate 101 defines the term buyer as a person who buys. It's not a prospect. It's not a person who's thinking of buying. It's not a person who's ready, willing, and able. It's a person who actually steps in and says, yeah, I'll buy it. Here's my money. I'm putting it on the table. That's the deal. So the buyer sets the market. So many times we see sellers saying, well, I think it's worth this. I think it's worth that. I think it's worth this. You can have all kinds of opinions coming in from various agents. You can have all kinds of opinions that you can actually pay for from competent fee-paid appraisers, and all of those people have one thing in common: they're offering you an opinion. It's like they have this almost imaginary crystal ball, and you say, "I think it's worth this," based on what they call an arm's length transaction, as opposed to I'm going to sell it to my son and I'm going to give him the insider price. And based on this arm's length transaction, based on what they call comparable sales, houses that have similar features, like similar number of bedrooms, similar number of bathrooms, similar number of amenities, and maybe the square footage, similar things. They're not like your house, because you can actually use a comparable property. You can have a four-bedroom, two-story traditional home, and it can actually be used as a comparable sale if you had a ranch house that had similar square footage. Now, granted, one can easily make the argument in a ranch house that, well, even a ranch house costs more money to build than a two-story house. Why? Because it has what they call a bigger footprint. The roof line is longer. There's just more things that go into it. So it costs more to produce that thing. But either way, it could still be used as a comparable sale, not because it's like the other house, but just because it's similar in terms of those amenities. And it's an important concept to bear in mind. But the thing to also bear in mind is whoever is telling you what the house is worth, they're only offering you an opinion. And one opinion could be more valuable than another. However, the only person that has anything to really say in the matter that to set the market itself is a person who says, yes, I will step up, I will buy it. Now, you do get into the situation where a guy says, you know what, I know it was on for 2.25 and I'll buy it for 300. So he's setting the market, and he's absolutely positively setting the market if he's doing a cash transaction. Now, let's sort of make this even more interesting. Let's presume the same buyer is deciding that he wants to use financing. And you'd say, well, these days with the interest rate going up, wouldn't it be better to pay cash? You know what? The money's still pretty cheap money out there. I mean, it's teetering around 6, and it's, in most cases, under 7 at this point. It's still very cheap money. Now, I know it's about as cheap as 2 or 3%, which is what we had, you know, not too long ago. I think that ship has sailed. I don't know that ship is coming back. And not coming back for a while, Frank. Oh, not coming back ever, probably in my lifetime. And frankly, those rates were artificially low for much, much too long which is why we now have the challenge of no inventory. We talked about that last week and the week before. That's the interest rates were a good thing for lots of people. But if you didn't get in during those times, well, now it's going to be a little tougher for you to get in. And a lot of people will not catch the train because they say, well, I'm going to wait for the rates to come down and I'm going to wait for the prices to come down. And even if they do come down a little bit because the federal government wants to sort of preserve the economy artificially and breathe life into it, the prices are going to still go up because it's still they cannot change the immutable law of supply and demand. It's one of the first and only things that you really need to know about economics. It's just you can't beat it. It's what it is. So having said that, who sets the market? The buyer sets the market. And he sets the market in an extremely emotional time. So ultimately, you know, you're either going to step up or you're not going to step up. And recognize no matter how it shakes out, it's probably going to be a pretty emotional ride for you one way or the other. And now you get the other choice. Say, well, I don't want to do that. Well, that's fine. You don't have to. As long as those stars and stripes are flying out there somewhere, you don't have to do it. You don't have to buy. You can continue to rent. But as we have talked and mentioned on this show, rents are going up faster than the prices. And the prices are going up pretty damn fast. And that's just what it is. Now, something else. Because of this scarcity thing, we are having people saying, should I waive the home inspection? Should I not waive the home inspection? Should, you know, if I do the home inspection, should I demand repairs on the house? And you know what? This is not a simple answer. It's just not. However, if you think about one of the things we talked about in a few of the other sessions was the concept of what is a buyer, what is a seller looking for when he puts his house on the market? What a seller is looking for is he's looking to have the easiest transaction he could possibly have, which means he wants to have the fewest number of what we call weasel clauses. I'm not talking about the animal, but I'm talking about opportunities that are put into a contract of sale that give either party, but it's usually more stacked in the buyer's camp, that they'll have more of these out clauses. If this doesn't happen, then I'm out of the deal. If my house doesn't appraise based on the bank coming in saying it has to appraise for this price, and banks will sometimes kill a deal, as in the scenario they gave me before, where if you're paying cash on the house that is on for two and a quarter and it goes for 300, if you're paying cash, you set the market, you're home free. There's no other contingencies after that. But if you're putting a financing contingency in there, which is not unusual, and most people do that. I'd say more do than don't. There is a higher number of people buying for cash these days, just as a matter of information. It's still skewed in the mortgage category more than the cash, but as a percentage, it used to be maybe 5%. Well, now it's teetering around just under about 20% are cash transactions. So if you're using the simple, you know, crazy statistical analysis, well, it's probably gone up four times. 5 to 20% would be a four-time, 400% increase. But if the bank says, well, yeah, I know you want to pay 300, but since we're lending you the bulk of the money, we're saying it's only worth 275, well, now you have a different issue, which is why, quite simply, most sellers would rather have a cash transaction than one that has a mortgage contingency. It's pretty much that simple. And most sellers would rather have a transaction that doesn't have a home inspection contingency. Why? It's not because they're trying to hide anything. It's because they're saying, well, in this particular market, if I have all these people out here that are willing to pay cash and they're willing to say, yes, I want to buy it right now. I don't need to think about it. I don't need to have somebody else come in and give me a second opinion or a third opinion. I want to buy it now. Why would they want to deal with you that wants to put them in that situation? It's that simple. So here's the question. Let's presume that you're in a situation where you are able to say, yes, I want a home inspection, and you're able to find a seller that says, yes, I'm willing to sell you the house right now because your offer was better than the other person's, even though they didn't have a home inspection contingency, but you're willing to pay me more money. Sure, you can have a home inspection. I'll give you 3 days to do it. So you do the home inspection, and then the next thing that happens is you come back and say, well, listen, I've noticed that A, B, and C are not correct. They're not up to code. They're I'd like you to fix the downspout, something, you know, whatever it might be. And let's presume these are not Mickey Mouse items, like one of the switch plates is crooked, or what they typically call punch list items. Punch list items are typically found in new construction, where after they build the house, you know, and if it's a model, especially, they'll take everything out of the model. The furniture comes out of the model, and they'll have to go in and fix some nail pops, or, you know, maybe repaint over some where the pictures were hanging, things like that. They're very minor things. They're not, you know, categorically, you know, going to make the house fall down. But having said those things, if you come back with a laundry list of items, here's the question. Should I demand that the homeowner do it? You can make all the demands you want, but this is where we get it into the wonderful, wonderful art of negotiation. And remember, negotiation is a back and forth. It's not agreement. It's a back and forth. Negotiation is not capitulation. That's where I say, well, will you do this? And the guy says, oh, yeah, I'll do that. If he doesn't have to say that, he can say, let me think about it. No, I don't want to do that. Whatever. But you're going to go back and forth. Well, would you do this if you're not willing to do that? So if you make demands, sometimes the seller's willing to do them. Sometimes they're not. But here's the key. And we hear that. I just heard this again. And it's like, I don't know how many times we have to talk about this thing. The seller is not obligated to make any repairs whatsoever. The place could be falling down. He doesn't have to make a repair. If he agrees to make a repair, that's his business. But he's not obligated by any law. The biggest myth out there is that they have to make repairs. They are obligated to make repairs that have to do with health and safety issues. No, they're not. It might make sense for them to do it, but they're not obligated to do it. They can say, yes, here's the deal. I know there's a crack in, and I just saw this the other day. There was a major crack in the foundation of a house. And when we look at cracks in foundations as agents, we're not engineers. We're not home inspectors. But we know that there's certain good guidelines. And some of the good guidelines on home inspections is vertical cracks are bad. Horizontal cracks are worse, generally speaking. But I just saw a house, you know, a horizontal crack. Man, I could get into it. It was so big. The seller may not ever want to make any kind of adjustment on that. Well, it may mean that he never gets to sell his house too, but he's not obligated to do it. So you know, you can say, well, I saw this. My home inspector called it to my attention. I even had it. He said, this is a bad thing and you must fix it or I won't go through the sale. Well, then you may not go through with the sale. It's really quite that simple. So you can make demands, but understand it's a negotiation. It's not an obligation and it's not capitulation. There are certain things that sort of occur, like radon inspections. You know, we talk about radon a lot. Radon's it's a thing. It's a real thing. It's radon's a colorless, odorless gas, and it comes out of the ground, and it's pretty much everywhere. Radiation's everywhere. It's like sometimes people, there was mold in the house. Well, there's mold in every house. There are no houses in existence that don't have mold. The question is the mold bad? You know, is it what they sometimes call, is it black mold? If it's black mold, then it could be bad. You could actually have black mold that's maybe not bad, but you could certainly have mold that's treatable or remediable. But if you find it and you call it to the seller's attention, here's where it gets really greasy. He's not obligated to fix it. Chances are, if he wants to have the transaction go through, he's probably going to have to address it in some way, shape, or form. But if he just digs his heels in, or she just digs his heels in, they'll get into all the other stuff with the woke thing. I know. If the seller says, I won't do it, the big challenge is, well, he's not obligated to, but this is what he is obligated to do. He's obligated to disclose it to the very, very next buyer. So, because whether the buyer has an inspector go through or not, he has to say, here's the deal. I need to call this to your attention. There was an inspection. Inspector came in on the last transaction. He said, I had a mold issue. I had a radon issue. I'm calling it to your attention that I have these things. I'm not going to do anything about it, but I have these things. And here's the thing where this is reality. This is reality radio. As far as I know, ever a seller tells you they have these things, in almost all cases, the buyer will come back and they'll say the magical words, gee, I don't really care, just fix it. And usually they'll probably have to fix it for the second buyer because the first buyer's left town already. So the question is, if you're going to have an inspection, have an inspection. If you find a seller that's willing to give you the luxury of one, because right now it has become a bit of a luxury. There are home inspectors out there right now that I've recently had the good fortune to embrace who have a new kind of business model. I said, this makes all the sense in the world, where they'll come along and they'll do, it's not really a full inspection, but it's an inspection on the important things, the key components like the roof, the furnace, and the circuit breakers, and the hot water heater. And they'll come along with you on one of your showings. Like you see a house, you want a second showing, they'll come along on the second showing, and they'll give you a quick overview. It's a quick overview. They don't charge you a full charge for the complete inspection. And again, I'm not going to quote their fees, but let's just say for the sake of argument, they'll charge $175 to do this miniature inspection. And then if you want to do a complete inspection after the fact, after you close on the house, they'll do the rest of the thing. But they're going to tell you about the things that you should have been concerned about anyway, which is the big ticket items, the furnace, the hot water heater, the roof, and the electrical system. After that, you know, you should be able to make some sort of an educated opinion as whether or not you want to proceed with the sale. That makes sense, because if you do it that way, then you're not putting an offer in on the property subject to a home inspection, because you did it during your due diligence period. You didn't do it after you entered into a contract of sale. So that's pretty cool. That makes some sense. And that gives you kind of the best of both worlds, where you're in a competitive market, but you can still have your home inspection and not throw yourself out of the equation. So with the change and with the changes in the market and with the things that are occurring in the market, there's ways that you can sort of, I don't want to say protect yourself, but just make better decisions. And, you know, if you decide that, you know, prices are going up too fast and you don't want to jump in, that's fine. That's your decision. You don't have to do anything. But understand, when you do decide to buy, you're going to set the market. You're going to say, yes, I will step up and I will pay this price. And nobody else is going to pay more, so I'm going to pay this based on these terms. And as far as I know, real estate is cool. And if everyone keeps their heads on straight, it doesn't have to become an emotional free-for-all. So that's kind of our little chit-chat for this week. We're doing our show live, as I said, and you can call in next week, certainly, at the number 563-999-3066. We'd love to talk to you and see what you have to say for yourself and whether or not you have anything to say. Maybe we can just chit-chat about where you think things are going. I happen to be somewhat optimistic and think that, you know what, they're going to keep going up, because in inflationary times, and that's really the backbone of what's happening in the market right now that no one wants to talk about. Things tend to keep going up. And you know, will they stabilize at some point? They'll stabilize, but I don't think they're going to go down. That I don't really think that's a thing. Tune in next week for Real Estate is Cool. Share your ideas. We can't be right all the time. Sometimes we are, sometimes we're not. But you know what? Your opinions matter, because it's only through your opinions and having a frank and open and even discussion about what you think you need to do and what might make some sense and what's the best strategy that you could realize your real estate goals. So without further ado, we're going to listen to the wonderful sounds of Thelonious Monk. I just love that name, Thelonious. If I ever have another kid, I'm going to name it Thelonious. Chances are probably not. Tune in next week. We'll see you then. All right, so you couldn't get in.
No, I couldn't. I called, and it said...